Welcome to the Willful Thinking Podcast, where I, Will Coleman, have real conversations with the people shaping our community. Each episode will bring unfiltered talks with local business owners, mentors, community leaders, and friends who inspire, challenge, and make things happen. We hope you enjoy this production of the Willful Thinking Podcast. This episode of the Willful Thinking Podcast hosts a sea wolf. Yes, a Sonoma State University grad, a baseball player, a husband, a father, a professional in the roofing industry, my good buddy, Mr. Nelson Gray. Nelson is my manufacturer rep for GAF Steep Slope Building Products. We've installed a lot of GAF roofs since we started Sierra Hills Roofing. I'm so thankful that he was willing to come on and share his insights about the industry and about his experience in roofing. Thank you so much to my good pal, Nelson Gray, and we hope you enjoy this episode of the Willful Thinking Podcast.
All right. Go.
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 Go. I like that. God.
Well, don't worry about an artist block, you know, just
no,
like,
I don't have that.
Go, action, three, go. Two, one, action.
Well, you came out on the right side of both of those games.
I came out on the right side of those. I did parlay a Chiefs with an under and missed that by three. That was a bummer, yeah, but
unders weren't working.
Yeah. Well, welcome to the Willful Thinking Podcast.
I like that.
You like that?
I do like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, I thought you would. The premise of this is just kind of a creative outlet for me. Want to talk local business, a little bit of local politics. Actually, I've got a city councilwoman coming on here in a few weeks. But then just kind of, you know, not all shop, have a little fun cutting up with some good people and we'll see where it goes. I mean, you know, I can promise you this, tens of people will see
I would imagine.
So
tough act to follow. You know, I hosted a radio show in college. We were the leading listeners. We had the most listeners of anyone in the class. I think we had 14.
Well, it's a good round number.
You know, it is. Yeah. I think 11 of them were related to me.
Okay.
My dad, you'd have thought that I was like Jim Rome in his prime. My dad thought I was just the greatest radio.
So sports talk radio.
Sports talk radio.
College, your school, or it was everything.
It was I mean, Sonoma State Athletics, RIP, by the way. We can talk about that in a second.
Well, let's do.
That didn't really bring in all the listeners, so we liked to talk about all sports. But yeah, Sonoma State, my alma mater, just cut all 11 athletic teams they had left.
Wow.
All of them gone.
What is Sonoma State's mascot?
The Sea Wolf.
The Sea Wolf.
So before I got there, they were the Cossacks, which I would have loved to be a Cossack.
Yeah, who wouldn't?
They, you know, the Russians persecuted too many people.
Uh-huh.
So it became the Sea Wolves, which was, of course, after the famed Jack London book, The Sea Wolf, as one knows.
Yeah, I read a few of his works.
Sure. yeah, now, you know. No more sports there.
You did play college athletics.
Yeah, college baseball.
Yeah.
Went there to huck the ball around a little bit.
You're still hucking the ball around
still a little bit. Still hucking the ball. 38 years old, still chasing the dream.
The Wood Bat League.
Wood Bat, sure.
Yeah.
Knocked one out of the park last year.
Nuh-uh.
Don't come up and in on me. Not going to happen. But yeah, no, me and my buddies are getting a little long in the tooth. I remember when we were like the young team who stole all the bases and all that. And not as many bases being stolen.
Who's leading the league in steals in the Wood Bat League? Do we know?
I'm gonna be honest with you. On our team, I was far and away the stolen base leader.
Hey.
I think I had like 8 or 10.
Are you still sliding into the bag?
Sliding in. Uh-huh. I'm trying not to go head first because it gets a little embarrassing when I show up to meetings with blood on my elbows.
Sure.
But they can't see the blood on the knee.
Do you think you're faster, like sliding in butt first, or I always thought the head first you had to maybe gain like a half a second.
I'm all about what looks the coolest.
Yeah,
and sliding head first looks way cooler.
Oh, dude, Kenny Lofton,
so cool. Just
that chain hanging out.
It looks so great.
Yeah,
and I don't know that I look like Kenny Lofton.
Probably not. No.
Probably more like an offensive lineman sliding into second, but. I'm all about the looks. Look good, feel good, play good.
Yeah.
If the last one comes, it comes. But I want to look nice out
there. See it, feel it, trust it.
That's right.
You know,
you get it.
Yeah. So, big Padres fan. I know this.
Oh my God. Yeah.
Another just terrible end of the year.
It's getting worse too.
You had to be feeling pretty good after a game or two, right?
I was feeling great. Yeah. I was feeling great. And I mean, that 7-game series, I think the Pods might have taken the Dodgers 5-game series. I mean, you're up 2-0. I got no excuses.
Yeah.
Everybody's saying, oh, I wish we spent that much money. We lost 2-0 in game 5, and they just threw relievers. It has nothing to do with money or Otani or any of that crap.
Yeah.
Dodgers got hot.
Did you make it to a postseason game this year?
No, not this year.
Okay.
So I was going to hold out. But one of the greatest games I ever went to was postseason when they eliminated the Dodgers in 21 or 22. I can't remember. That was awesome.
Is there any team you like seeing them beat more?
The Giants.
The Giants.
The Giants have sucked lately, and the Dodgers are now, you know, public enemy number one. But when I moved up to Northern California, well, I went to college up here, but then I moved up officially in 2010, and then the Giants rattled off 3 World Series, and all my buddies are Giants fans. It was
10, 12, 14, right?
Yeah. It was just horrific. So I like that they're, you know, kind of in the doldrums a little bit, but, you know, Dodgers, they're a force to be reckoned with. Padres, I don't know if you've been keeping up, having big ownership issues right now. We had an owner who made a ton of money, and he spent a ton of money. We got a new owner, and he bought Machado and gave Tatis the deal. He's handing out money like you wouldn't imagine.
Mm-hmm.
And then he died suddenly last offseason. And then coincidentally, now 2 off-seasons in a row, we have cut payroll. His leeches of brothers are not fulfilling his dreams that the Padres fans would hope. Now the widow is suing the brothers. It's a disaster.
Well, look at it this way. At least you're not going to be playing all your home games in Sacramento.
Oh, boy.
So.
Feel for the A's.
Holy cow, man.
It'll be cool seeing major league talent in that nice little yard.
No doubt. Yeah. But,
I wonder what tickets are going to be like. I have no idea.
I would guess some games will be easier to attend than others from a financial perspective.
I know some businesses that tried to get ticket, boxes, and they were gone like that, you know.
Well, you know, though, good for the city for that. I mean, it's going to be a nice little revenue boost for our little town.
I would imagine. Yeah. I know people are hoping that they stay. I don't. Structure's not there to.
No, but it's got to be easier to just create what you would need to have for a legitimate major league franchise from what you already have there than it would be starting from scratch in Vegas.
I don't know how that is going to work out, but I think the city of Sacramento has proven, kind of like Oakland fans, I think Sacramento fans have proven to be, you show a shred of success.
Yeah.
The Kings games are wild if they're decent.
So that was my last year when they played the Warriors. I did get to go to game 7.
Oh, cool.
That was my first time ever going to a playoff game of any sort in any sport for that matter. Yeah. Not an empty seat in the house.
They get rocking.
It was pretty cool, man. And yeah, a lot of the fans there were Golden State fans as well. They travel well when it's only a 2-hour drive.
They sure do.
But that was pretty unforgettable. And then Steph dropping 50. Was also pretty unforgettable, but tough go at it so far. Have you been to a game this year?
Not this year.
Yeah, me either. I think we're hovering around 500 at the moment. So
got hot though. They fired the coach, which looked like a terrible look, and then they've gotten hot.
They've won every home game since, I think.
Pretty much. My brother-in-law works for the Kings.
Yes.
I think it was right before Christmas. He said, if the Kings lose the day after Christmas, they were playing the Suns. He said, if they lose the Suns, there'll be 4 losses in a row and heads are going to roll. And they lost the Suns, and the coach was fired the next day. Maybe he's onto something.
Wow.
De'Aaron Fox was talking about wanting to get traded.
Yikes.
Which I don't hate, because he's always said, I want to be on the same team in the same city. Guys don't do that anymore. I want to do that. And then he basically said, well, I want to do that, but I don't want to fight for a.
I'd also like to win a championship, potentially. Yeah.
Or at least not have to fight to get in the playoffs. Yeah, half the freaking league makes the playoffs. Yeah. I'd like to at least breeze into the playoffs, which. You know, I could see that frustration, but they look like they keep playing how they are. So,
we'll see. I mean, I think they were when they beat Golden State at home last week, they were in like 6th or 7th at that time, but then they've lost a couple since. So, I don't know.
Yeah. They're fun games to go to either way. I'm not the biggest NBA fan growing up in San Diego. You know, like kids our age liked everyone, Shaq and Kobe, and LA was close to us. And I didn't want to jump on that bandwagon. So I didn't really do the NBA.
We had the Wizards was our closest team in proximity to where I grew up in Virginia. We did get a Michael Jordan year. So
that's right. Yeah. Sure did.
But Kings was the first NBA game I ever attended in person.
Yeah.
So I've kind of, you know, I've kind of chosen to ride with them for better or worse.
Yeah, I wish we could have moved to cities where the teams were actually good.
Yeah, like, I did a stint in Chicago, and that was well after the Jordan Pippen Rodman era. But and they're pretty bad now.
Pretty bad.
They had that Derrick Rose guy that everybody thought was the second coming, and never really panned out.
He had a knee injury of sorts. I don't know if he could read either. He had a SAT issues that I think got brushed under the rug over there in Memphis.
Speaking of, my dad coached basketball at the high school level, and that's his sport that he loves to watch more than anything else. He hates what's going on with the transfer portal we can talk about that in a minute.
Disaster.
But, you know, he follows the larger college schools, especially the ones that have historically, you know, successful franchises. And when the Kings picked up DeMarcus from Kentucky, he was fascinated by that because he said, you know, I looked into DeMarcus at Kentucky. He had a 0.0 grade point average.
It's not good.
He was put on academic probation following first semester with a 0.0 grade point average.
That'll do that.
Played the season in second semester on academic probation and then declared for the draft. So I don't think he attended a single class during his time at the University of Kentucky. It makes you wonder how many people go that route, you know?
I knew some college football players at Cal. And I mean, you gotta be smart to get into Berkeley, even if you got the athletic stamp for the most part. But they had more help than I would have ever imagined. And they would get, like, grad assistants would go and check and make sure that they were in class. I mean, even Aaron Rodgers and these guys, check to make sure that they're in class. But they also had their schedule was suggested to them what classes should be taken. I remember there was a geology class they all called Rocks for Jocks. And it was just filled with football and basketball players.
Rocks for jocks.
So I'm thinking that. It wasn't very strict on, you know, the test probably wasn't too tough to maintain that 2.0.
They couldn't spell metamorphic if they had to, or sedimentary, know. I went to that class, too.
Yeah, it sounds like it. I like that.
I did take a geology class and, what was it called? It was a class on agronomy for my professional golf management concentration.
Agronomy. What are we studying in agronomy?
The study of turf and grasses.
Turf and grass. That checks out. One of the greatest things that I ever learned in the history of my education was in fifth grade, we had to study Greek and Latin roots. So I'm a little disappointed I didn't know what agronomy meant because anything that ends in logy or onomy is the study of. I learned, and then you just learn all of the other, you can break it all apart. Agronomy is a new one.
Agriculture, I guess, would have been a good guess as well. But
yeah,
for us, at least that's what the textbook said.
It's well, that's probably more like, that's, agriculture is probably more farming and stuff.
Yeah.
You know, not focused just on turf.
And the only reason you're growing that grass on the golf course is so you can cut it.
That's true. You know what grass was looking great recently? I played golf at La Contenta.
Ooh.
And the greens I played out there with Teddy Ballgame, Teddy Martinez, those greens were lightning. We were stunned. I mean, I've played it a handful of times, but that course was in phenomenal shape. What a weird situation that was.
Teddy Ballgames, man. So Ted Martinez of the Martinez brothers
Martinez brothers.
The Central Valley roofing sales force that they are.
Oh, yeah.
Dude, this guy, the first time I ever played golf with him, he took me out to the one in Stockton.
No, Spanos. That's
his stomping
that's his
ground.
Track, baby.
He dropped a pretty easy 67 and beat me by every bit of 10. Ooh. And I was 50 ahead of him on every hole. Yeah,
doesn't happen to the big fella.
And just watched him. Oh, no, I'm hitting second.
Yeah.
But I'm watching him pepper flags from 50 behind me and go. And then he's making the putts. And I'm like, yeah, this is not it for me.
I'm sure Ted's going to tune into this. And so So I mean no offense to this, Ted. You're the only person that I don't enjoy playing golf with. He's no fun.
He takes it pretty serious.
He's out there to score well.
Yeah.
He's going to walk off the green before I'm putting. It's very little
he's in the zone,
fodder, you know, and that's all well and good. He also complains a lot.
All right.
You know, when you're going to shoot a 71 every time you play and you're whining because your back hurts and your hip hurts and I need to adjust a degree on my driver, and I didn't assess him a penalty for doing that round. You know,
that's big of you.
I like to. I'm out there with my customer. I don't want to make him feel bad about himself being a cheater. But
I was too far ahead of him to hear him complaining. So,
but he's good. He is.
God, he's so good. So we know each other from our days working together originally. We both worked for a pretty significant roofing manufacturer.
Sure.
We went different ways with our careers. I went to another manufacturer, as did you. I came back to the previous manufacturer for a short time, and now I'm trying to run a roofing business.
Sure.
And you're
plugging away,
man. You're loving life on the red
little less
the red
stressful.
Rockets.
Yeah, you know? On the red rockets, a little less stressful, I'm sure.
Yeah.
But no, I admire that you launching into what you're doing. I think that's where you've been meant to be for a long time.
It's something, man. It is the challenge of my lifetime. And there are a lot of days that I wonder if I've got what it takes to make it, but I think that that's just part of the deal. You gotta, you know, I'm proving it to myself as well as any skeptic I've ever had, but, it is harder than I thought it would be. Admittedly,
I'm sure it
makes me look upon my previous customers and, you know, contractor guys that we would call on when we were teammates with a lot more respect. Some of them are still idiots. Let's be honest.
Yep.
But the ones that really have done well for themselves, I recognize more than ever what it must have taken to get to that. And man, good on them. It is not easy.
Yeah. You know, it's so, and pretty much every time we talk, I say like, hey, I'm going to say it again. Like now that you're on that side of the table, like, you know, is the stuff that we were talking to guys, how much bullshit is it? You know, like
it's a lot.
A lot.
Yeah, and I mean, it's a lot.
It's so easy to say how to do X, Y, and Z. But, you know, my wife met with a bunch of my teammates now and a couple of the guys saying like, oh, you know, we all like to talk crap about the contractors and how dumb they are and this and that, yada, yada, yada. I don't do that.
Ever.
Yeah. but a few of the guys like, well, I'm going to start my own company, yada, yada, yada. And we walked away and she said, why do you, all you idiots think you can run one of these businesses?
Dude, let me tell you the best piece of advice I could give anyone else with that frame of thought. Don't do it, man. Just enjoy what you have and appreciate that.
Well, I think what I said to her is we see so many people who do it wrong and a handful who do it right.
Yeah.
And you see what has worked and what hasn't worked, but we're looking from the outside, you know, outside looking in, this isn't working and that is or whatever. So I think so many guys think like, well, I can mimic what these guys are doing. Or if this guy's my competition, 80% of these guys are my competition, I can beat that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I mean, there are days that I'm checking, I'm clocking out, you know, pick up my kid from school at 2:30 and dropping him off. And it's a lot less stressful. I'm going to sleep. I'm sleeping pretty well every night, you know?
But so much more goes into it than I thought on the bidding side, because like, I really did think, okay, I can differentiate myself from a lot of my competitors just in a conversational manner. Like I'm pretty confident in what I can bring to the kitchen table compared to a lot of folks that I would go up against, just as far as making them feel comfortable with who I am, explaining a product properly, setting good expectations for how a project would run. But there are objections that I'm still learning how to get over and that I thought I'd never heard. I got my first one of I couldn't wait to tell you this. I was the cheapest bid.
Oh.
And they didn't pick me because I was the cheapest bid.
I just scared them off.
And I was like, holy shit. I didn't realize that was a deal. I thought that like so much, especially with like where our economy is and, you know, we're not struggling per se, but the thought of having a $20,000 bill get slid across the table and you have no choice but to do it, because if you don't protect the one thing keeping your house dry, you may not have a house. Or if
we protect what matters most here on the Red Rock,
my guy. But or you've got insurance saying, hey, if you don't do this, we're going to drop you. And so like oftentimes when it comes to replacing a roof, the decision's really made for you.
Yep.
Then you do get to interview whatever contractor you want. But the decision to get the roof is already done. You have really no say in it. And I would have guessed that like so much of that decision would come down to price.
Right.
And I think it probably still does. Maybe this was an anomaly, but I couldn't help myself. And I was like, well, I can go up if that's what you need.
We throw in four extra grand, make you feel better about
yourself. Totally make this cost more if that's what it takes. But that was the first one I've lost to that. One that I've heard a couple of times is like, hey, we really liked you. We really appreciated how you laid things out. We went with a company that's been around a little longer than you have. And it's like, okay, that makes sense. On paper, my company is 3 years old this year.
Yeah.
We started in 22, but we really haven't been doing roofs for that long. Sure. But our company is 3 years old. But longevity in this business means something. And there are a few companies in our area that have been in business for 40 plus years. And it's like, hey, that's a big deal.
Yep. Yeah.
And when it comes down to it, it's like, hey, I don't really have a retort for that. Like, nope. I can't come back with.
You can tug at the heartstrings.
Yeah, for sure.
A young up and coming family, but
for sure,
that's hard to overcome because it's all about building trust, and we know all that stuff. And people trust somebody who says, "Yeah, my grandpa was putting on roofs in this town in 1972."
Yeah,
that's tough to overcome.
No doubt, man. I do think that where we have an advantage there is like if I can articulate the value of the warranty. And why partnering with you guys was such an easy decision. You know, I only have to own this roof essentially for 2 years, and then you guys own it for the rest of the time that it's on there. That's a big deal.
Yeah.
But if I haven't fully sold that concept, then it doesn't matter because, hey, I'm still going to go with the company that I believe is going to be around or has a better chance of being around longer.
I remember, you know, talking about being the lowest bid. I talked to a contractor that you know up in the Shingle Springs area, mm-hmm. but he said when he first started out and didn't have a lot of money or anything, he had kind of a rinky dink little red like Ford Ranger was his work truck, and he said I pull up to their house and they're kind of looking at me like, who's this guy? And, I mean, is that truck even going to make it home today?
Yeah.
And then he had a little bit of success and he got a nicer truck, not a $150,000 truck, you know, a nice truck. And put a nice truck wrap on it. And then he said he started getting some feedback like, well, I know where my money's going. Like, you got that nice truck there. Yeah. I know right where my money's going. And he's thinking like, well, hell, my truck was too shitty before. Now it's too nice. But you know, that's just things that you don't even think about.
Yeah.
Coming to get in the way. But
I heard a piece of advice recently that I really liked. And it is applicable to our business, but it's also one that, you know, hey, when this thing launches, right, when this podcast launches, and let's say like 1,000 people end up seeing it. Well, you know how it is on social media. There's going to be comments.
Sure.
Some people might love it. Some people might be like, look Absolutely. At this fat idiot or whatever. Absolutely. But you can't take criticism from someone who you also wouldn't take advice from.
That's very good.
And so it's like, look, I think that at the end of the day, like my goal here is to, if I lose a quote or a job, understand why to the best of my knowledge, change what I can change about it. And then you just got to move on, go to the next one. Yep. And there are some people that, you know, we've won the job for, and I'm like, God, I didn't charge enough because, you know, they were a pain to do. There's some where we've won the job for, and I'm like, I can't believe how much money we made on this one job. This was a lot easier than I thought it would be. Far less of those than the former. But I think that bidding work is incredibly difficult, and it's something I took for granted. It's easy for, you know, we're in the roofing business. There's a known amount of square footage that you are going to be working with. And then if you take that square footage and divide it into your costs, pretty easy to calculate what you are working at per square foot or where you're working per square foot. And it's easy to compare your company to other companies if you find out where the other company bid per square foot. But it's not just a price per square foot that's important to how your business continues to thrive and grow. And I think that even if it says you made X amount on paper, if it made your head spin a little more at night than some of these other jobs to make that X amount, that's a factor that you really Absolutely. Can't put on paper. And I think that's been something that's been really challenging to learn.
Yeah.
Well, you know,
you'll run into these firsthand, but I always, I educate people on stuff that I've never done, like running a business.
Yeah.
But I'll say, you don't always need to take every job that you win. You're going to win. And I say to some of these guys, sometimes the best job that you win is the one that you turn down. If you got a nightmare of a customer who's going to ruin, you know, make your life hell for the next year or two.
Yeah.
It's worth it to say, why don't you go with it? Because it really is a partnership. Like
it has to be.
You need to feel comfortable with them and they need to feel comfortable with you. Yep. I think a lot of guys think if I win the job, I got to take it. When you're starting out, how do you say no to a job that you could potentially be winning? That
I don't know the answer to that yet.
That's gotta be
tough. I think that the beauty of this industry and this trade, this is a very short relationship with the end consumer. You know, you meet with them once for their initial, you know, bid gathering process. A job takes 2 to 4 days for most residential houses in our area. You're in, you're out pretty quick. I think we do a good job of cleaning up after ourselves, and hopefully once we've left, there's really no reason for us to communicate again other than me saying, hey, your final inspection has been scheduled. Here's sure. the day it's going to be. If you want to be there, great. I learned something from one difficult experience that I had with a customer where they called us back a total of 5 times following the completion of the job for things that really didn't have anything to do with the scope of work that was described mm-hmm. in contract. One of them were paint details. One of them was the color of a couple of screws they found on some gutter guards didn't match, and they weren't happy with that. One of them was the downspout was too short, and then it was too long. And then it's like, all right, man, like, you know, and finally at the end of the day, I had to put my foot down and say, like, look, we've met our contractual obligation. Like we've now revisited 4 different times. Right. I have to kind of draw the line in the sand. And that's the only time that's happened. I think most people are very reasonable. And me as a business owner, I have to ask, like, hey, if we get a call back, which we've gotten more than just that one, sure. is the request reasonable or is it unreasonable? And I think most of the time I can kind of see where it would be reasonable sure. in their eyes. And it's like, all right, let's go do this. But also, you know, we now have a form that the client signs when we finish the project and done a walk around that is a client approval form saying we have met our contractual obligation and fulfilled that agreement.
That's a good call.
And that's been a positive thing, I think, for everyone.
Sure.
But still, if it is something that gets noticed after the fact, that's the question I'm always going to ask. Is this reasonable or right. is it unreasonable?
Well, you know, you talked about it, like leveling expectations. Mm-hmm. I talked to a homeowner yesterday, which my company now, my phone number is posted on our website.
Oh, my gosh.
Which I don't care for. it does occasionally will benefit because I like to be able to give you a call if some homeowner is calling me saying, who do I go with? That's not usually why they're calling.
Yeah.
This gal called and had some concerns about her roof, and some of them were very valid. And some of them was like, you know, we just keep finding nails everywhere. I'm like, you know, they put 7,000 nails in mm-hmm. your roof. Like you're going to find some, like that one. I get this concern. That's not a big deal. And she said, you know, and when their crew came up and this was a ragtag bunch. Well, you know, miss roofers aren't you typically going to come up in a tuxedo to put yeah. your roof on? They're going to look, that's a hard ass job.
It's pretty rough.
They ain't going to be looking 100%. You know, so it's just funny, like what things that she started judging this contractor.
Yeah.
On. I was like, we can talk about this piece that you're concerned about. These other things, you're going to find that every single time a roof gets replaced.
Yeah.
So I think expectations is a big part of that puzzle. And if you don't level them appropriately, then people are going to think something's wrong.
Yeah.
I don't know.
You know, for those of our viewers that haven't gathered this, you are a manufacturer's rep yeah. for the largest roofing manufacturer sure. in the world.
Yeah.
Price is something that comes up not just on the manufacturer, or excuse me, on the bidding side of things. It's been center point of a lot of conversations in our industry, probably since COVID or before.
Yep.
And it seems like COVID really, really affected the price of everything, raw materials, transportation, availability, you name it, more than any other event in modern times, agreed. Right?
Yep.
At least in manufacturing. I've been out of it for over a year now, so I don't know. But what are you seeing? Are you seeing stabilizing price? Are we still seeing more demand than supply will support?
We're still seeing really high demand. Demand is still there. Price, so, I mean, you know how frequently the prices increase.
And it's wild, man. I think it's been 4 times a year every year for the past 4.
And we had one. The last one was in August. And we got another one coming on April 1. And when one of the, there's, as you know, a big three in roofing, some companies out there like to say that there's a big four, but not quite yet, not quite yet, kids.
Yeah.
But when one of us does it, the other two do it, just licking their lips.
It's waiting, unbelievable.
Just waiting for somebody to take that first step off the cliff.
But yeah.
I think for years, certainly when I got into the business, it was almost, there was so much business to be won that contractors almost laughed at the increase. It was annoying to them is what it was annoying, but it was like, yeah, whatever. You're going to increase another 6%. I got plenty of business. There's so many people out there that need a roof, all this. And it was kind of like a LOL. I'll be just fine. But you guys are scumbags for continuing to raise the price. This August price increase last year, there was some genuine pushback and concern. Mm-hmm. And finally contractors were like, hey guys, it was all fun and games last few years when business was booming and people had money and the market is going down and your prices are still going up. And it was the most pushback I had seen this past August. I haven't, you know, people are aware of the April 1st increase. We'll see when that actually comes, what the concern is going to be, but it's worrying. It's not a message that I like to pass along. I wish I could tell you the money was going in my pocket.
Yeah, for sure. That response too.
Yeah.
And just for any lawyer that might watch this, like the big three, they aren't in cahoots to raise prices at the same time. That's basic business. If one of the major three sees their competitor go up in price, they look at it as a perfect opportunity to follow.
Yep.
And every industry would do that.
Yep.
So that's, you know, we used to get teased about that all the time. It's like, oh, you guys are all just in big cahoots. No, that's number one, illegal.
Right.
It violates antitrust laws.
Yep.
But number two, it just doesn't happen. They're like people from one company. They're not calling another company being like, are you going up on this day? No. They're just waiting for the first person to jump. And then they're going, hey, here's a free chance for us to make more money because we're just going to follow what these guys are doing.
We did get that joke a lot, though. If I was talking to a rival manufacturer and everybody's, oh, there they are in cahoots.
Yeah.
I'm like, you think I'm so low on the totem pole.
Dude, it's so funny that people would say that.
I mean, to say that I have no say in pricing is the understatement of the year.
For sure.
But we're the boots on the ground, so it's easy to make the jokes. But you know,
so I'll say like, and I only know from here's how right you are. Like when we were able to kind of look at price and deduce where the market was price-wise, we were looking at a contractor's invoice from a distributor where they were buying the material and saying, this is what they are paying per square. I still to this day have no idea what my own company was charging to get it to that company.
No clue.
So we had no visibility on price.
Well, you know, you were a guiding light when I came into the business. And I remember saying to you, now hang on a minute. These distributors are expected to sell this material and they have no idea what they bought it for. And you're like, yeah. I said, there's just no way this is true. There's no chance.
I think that the higher ups, the big managers, the big C-suiters at the manufacturers and the distributors have done a pretty incredible job keeping price a complete secret from the rest of the industry.
I'm convinced that these multi-billion dollar companies, one of which I work for, I'm convinced there's maybe three people that know
what the actual price is.
Yeah. Just crazy. It's insane.
Yeah. But you know, my point with that was like, I started in 19, you started in 20, right? Mm-hmm. I remember in 19 seeing an invoice where a contractor was paying like $90 for a square of material. I would show one of my invoices on the screen here to say I'm paying $145 for a square of that same material 5 years later, 6 years later. So that's a 50% price hike.
That's horrific.
Yeah, in 5 years.
You're probably making 50% more than what you were.
Sure, sure.
We all, you know?
So, I mean, I guess, you know, my point with the initial line of question was like, do we see this stabilizing, or is there a need to continue at the trend of inflation that we've seen over the past 5 years? Or is it simply like, hey, the demand supports it, so why not just make as much as we can while the demand continues to support it? I don't know the answer, and I'm not asking you to speak on behalf of your manufacturer. I just wonder what you think. You know,
unfortunately, I see that you, like you said, you ride the wave as long as you can, and I think that the suits, seats, the opportunity is still there, and the demand is still there.
It's all across the country, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because we've seen some pretty significant weather events that in our lifetime, we haven't seen, you know, this amount of natural disasters.
Yeah.
Southern California, just think of all the building that's going to be required there over the next decade or more. Yep.
That, I think the new builds and rebuilds, I suppose you'd say, like down there, that's a little bit of a slower burn. I think it's when the sorry, my apologies to our brethren down there.
Yikes.
But I think it's when it's the tornadoes and not the catastrophic.
Yeah, the hurricanes.
Yeah, it's the ones where, you know, you're putting a Band-Aid on a bullet hole type of thing.
Yeah.
I think when you're just talking, like my mom lives outside Kansas City. She's gotten her roof replaced, I think, 3 times.
Hail?
Yeah, hail. And you see, man.
And people where we live have no idea what that does to a roof, man. But
it would look like some of the homes in her town would look like somebody took a machine gun to the side of the house, you know, and we don't see that out here. But those roofs get replaced, and that's easy.
Yeah.
And she lives in a little bitty town, and, you know, there's like one or two local roofers there, and the locals there don't like when people come in, storm chasers, of which there are plenty. But they say, no, we need to give Bill our business. And my mom's like, well, Bill's having coffee at 10 a.m. on a Wednesday with his buddies at the local little cafe. So when Julio and his friends came in from out of town and said that they'd rip off my 14 square roof and have it done by the end of the day, I went with them.
Yeah.
There's
something to that.
There's something to it. The storm chasing life. Holy smokes.
Those guys can hustle, man. I'll tell you.
And you better make sure you don't have a family. They can make a lot of money.
Yeah.
But I wouldn't want to live that way, but you can make a lot of money, you know, kind of akin to what was the Deadliest Catch. Those guys just go and work their tails off for a few months and then come back and spend it on what have you and go do it again. I think these guys just run around the country and make a ton of money. And I've heard that being a manufacturer rep in a storm market is a little bit more invasive. You know, you got people you don't know calling you on a Tuesday night at 8 o'clock saying, I need this many squares by 6:30 tomorrow morning. Can you help me out? I don't know if that's true or not.
Yeah.
It would make sense.
I think that if I was in a market where I was competing against the storm chaser, the easiest out there or the easiest thing to kind of argue or position would be, hey, as soon as all this work dries up, they're going to leave.
Gone.
So what happens then? You know, at least if you go with someone like us, we've got roots here. We're local.
Yeah.
You know?
I think that plays either way still. And we've got big old contractors that move into town. We've got a couple that just moved into town, and I'll talk to some contractors that I know and trust, and they'll say, who the heck is this guy? And I say, this is what I know about him. I know he's got locations all up and down the coast. Who knows how long he's going to stay here? Who knows if he knows who is putting his roofs on for him?
Yeah.
You know, it's never becoming, I think, to talk down about your competition when you're in the home.
Yeah.
But at some point, like, you got to say, like, okay, well, you know, this guy, his number might be right, but I don't know how long he's going to be here.
Yeah.
You know,
for sure.
I don't know.
I've had that one used successfully against me, you know, admittedly.
Sure.
But I agree. I think there is a level of professionalism where you can get your point across without directly,
exactly,
you know, kind of slamming your competitor. So
I've got some guys in our business who, you know, we want to sell more of our warranties, and I believe in our warranties.
Sure.
I think you do too. But he doesn't offer the workmanship portion of our warranty.
Yeah.
And he says, no, we offer our own workmanship. I say, you know, I train guys every day to sell against your dumbass.
Yeah.
Like, your warranty is a handshake deal. That's all that is.
That's it.
As opposed to putting it on my back. My company has been around since Coca-Cola was invented.
He also doesn't understand that, like, hey, if there ever is a workmanship claim and it's covered by you guys, you are paying him to go fix it as opposed to him paying for it himself.
It's crazy. And maybe he drinks his own Kool-Aid about how great his work is. I don't know. There's a couple guys out there where I'm like, man, you really do buy your own bullshit, don't you?
Yeah.
Good for you. I mean, good for you. Everybody's got their own truth.
You got to, man, at some point. Yeah, you got to have some conviction in whatever it is you're doing.
I had to go and look at a roof that was having some problems, and I knew it was going down a bad path. And I was like on the driveway looking up at it. And I don't know the most about roofing. And I'm on the driveway looking up like, oh boy, this isn't how it
should look.
This one's going to be ugly.
Yeah.
So unfortunately, I did have to climb up on that roof. It's not my favorite part of the job.
It still isn't mine, you know, and I do it the most now that I've ever done it, and it still isn't the most comfy thing in the world.
I bet.
Yeah. Well, when we're not roofing, I mean, obviously, we've got some shared interests in golf and everything else, but we both have kids.
Yeah.
Sports, any sports coming up, spring sports?
Baseball tryouts just happened. So my son's.
Are you coaching again this year?
So I was going to be a manager. Not a coach. I was going to be running the club. And then there were too many managers. So I withdrew my hat from the ring, received a email that was worded a little too strongly for my liking.
Really?
Volunteering. And I showed it to my wife thinking that she would tell me to calm down, that you're running a little too hot. And she used to manage volunteers. She worked at the Girl Scouts and managed all the volunteers, which you could imagine how those volunteers are. But she said, I can't believe this lady sent an email to a volunteer that said all that.
Yeah.
It was rude.
Oh my God.
I was hot.
Hold on a second. We can keep going.
And I can edit this.
Yeah. I was hot. You know, she basically said, I wish you to let me know sooner. You know, we have to decide who the managers are going to be at this event tomorrow night. I like to get this done before the draft, which they're drafting 7-year-olds, which is still beyond me. The draft was in 3 weeks, and she was just so rude. And I said, you know, your meeting to pick the managers, you mentioned is tomorrow night. I'm letting you know before. And then the draft is in 3 weeks. So me withdrawing my name, which you've already said you have too many managers, shouldn't be a problem. She also said, I'd prefer to just coach. My work schedule can get a little hectic getting home by time for practice 2-3 times a week, whatever. And I said, I'd probably just like to be an assistant coach. And she said, you know, that'll be up to the manager. If you're be allowed to coach, usually they let people volunteer who want to, but it's going to be up to them. And so I did reply to her and say, I've managed teams before, and I know that I could get all the help I could get. I don't think anybody's going to be turning me away help out with a bunch of 7-year-olds running around like idiots.
Oh my gosh.
I was pretty hot under the collar. Then went to the tryout, and it was just ridiculous. And I love sports, and I was just stunned at what they're trying to make these kids do.
We had a really different experience last year in baseball, to the point where we are not willing to manage or even participate in any sort of parental involvement other than dropping the kid off at the start of practice and being there at the end to pick them up. Yeah. And Lauren last year was conned. There is no other word to say it.
Oh boy.
Conned into coaching Harvey's T-ball team. She sent a message about a week after registration ended, only because we didn't realize that registration had begun. Mm-hmm. And she goes, hey, look, I guess we missed the deadline. Is there any way to still get him in? And she gets a response back saying, unfortunately, all the teams are full except for one team who has one remaining roster spot, but no coach. So if you're willing to coach,
you can have the spot.
You can have the spot.
Whoa.
So she's like, well, I mean, we had just started roofing roof every week. Yeah. And it was like, oh my gosh, like I can't do it, Lauren. No. Like snowball's chance. I couldn't do it. And she goes, I'll do it because I want him to be able to play. Not a week into that, they let another kid onto the team. Mm. And that's where I lost it. I was like, no way that you just got conned into doing this. And it was awful.
That's horrible.
She's the most patient woman I've ever met. I mean, she's married to me. And what that put her through. It's unimaginable, I think, for anyone that like truly enjoys doing that with a group of 5-year-olds. I want to get one of them on here and just say, like, what is inside your brain where that brings you joy and fulfillment?
Yeah.
This is our own kid. And he was one of the worst.
Yeah.
Like, and actually athletically, he was probably one of the better, but attitude wise, he's one of the worst. And you play T-ball. It's like, there's three positions on the field that you really want to play.
Yep.
You want to play pitcher or you want to play first base, 'cause you actually start throwing the ball over there. And then you want to play like that mix short in between short and third. Yeah. Otherwise, like, dude, if you're playing second base, you might as well just sit out. Yeah. And that's, matter of fact, that's what one kid decided to do just about every game. And Lauren was finally like, I need help with this kid. He won't listen to me.
Who are your parents?
So she looks at the dad and was finally like, can you please get him to do this? And he's sitting on the ground playing with a grasshopper at this point.
Riveting
and the stuff. Dad comes out and he's like, son. Give it a name and then let it go and listen to coach. Give it a name and let it go.
Whatever works.
Listen to coach. And I'm like, here we go. So never again.
I love coaching. I coached the first year of T-ball, and there was this kid named Brandon, and Brandon was the worst athlete I've ever seen in my life. He was not going to be long for the game of baseball. But I mean, when the first practice, he would go to throw and the ball would like roll off his hand and down his back. He couldn't even get it to go forward at all. And we were a couple weeks in, and I remember he was about 5 feet away, and I said, "Hey, Brandon, throw it to me," fully expecting the ball was going to roll down his back. And he threw it to me. And I was like, "Brandon, that was incredible. You've been practicing." He said, "Yeah, my dad and I've been practicing in the backyard."
Love that.
That was so cool. That was so cool. He's still the worst kid on the team, but you see the improvement and you see how excited he got.
Well, and dad's working with him too.
I loved all of that. But then, you know, for every Brandon, there was Tommy, who's playing outfield and running after geese towards the street. And I look over at his parents, and they're both on their phones during the game. And it was my first time ever coaching. And the guy who was helping, I said, "Dude, what do we do about Tommy? Where is he?" And he was on his third kid, so he's coached many teams.
Okay.
And he said, and I quote, "It's not my job to keep that kid on the fucking field." And I was like, whoa, first of all, I didn't know we were allowed to feel that way, because I've been feeling that way since the day I met this kid. But great. And so we just let the kid run off. And I'm like, if your kid's going to run in the street, that's on you. Like, what am I supposed to do here?
Yeah. Hope you're enjoying your Sudoku or whatever exactly. You're doing on your phone.
So like that was a challenge for me when parents just like, the kid didn't want to be there. They didn't want to be there. Like, why are we here then? You're not even watching. Your kid's batting right now and you're not even looking.
Yeah.
That was rough. I didn't like that. And I don't like how serious everybody takes it. And I am far too competitive in sports. It's a problem, yada, yada, yada. And it's cute to say that when you're like 17.
Yeah.
When you're closing in on 40, it's like you need to grow up. So I really take it easy. And I've got all these parents like, "Oh, are you guys going to play competitive baseball?" First of all, my son, bless his heart, not going to be.
We are right there with
also
you.
Also might not be long for the game.
Yeah, we are right there with you.
But like these, I'm like, they said, "Well, we're thinking about going competitive baseball." I said, "Like, we got three kids on our team that can catch."
Yeah.
"What do you mean competitive baseball?"
Yeah.
One lady's like, "Well, you know, this guy, he played in AAA." Like, that's great. Your kids still can't catch.
Yeah.
They need to practice playing catch till they're 12.
Yeah.
Like, they're seven. What are we doing? Why are we practicing two times a week with a game on Saturdays when they're seven?
Oh, my word.
It's crazy to me.
You guys are doing a little more than we're doing over in the Placer community.
You know, so as you know, I live in Folsom, and I think the success of the Folsom football, high school football program has made everybody there insane. And it's like we all put our heads in the sand that they're obviously recruiting the most talented kids in the greater Sacramento area, which how they're doing that legally, I don't know. But they're doing it.
Yeah.
And so then everybody thinks like, I don't know. They all think their kid's going to be the next big thing, and we're seven, and I just don't understand. I just don't get it.
You may not know this. Is Folsom doing the same program that Del Oro's doing, where they have like the NFL flag football league?
They have a flag football league. I know that.
Okay. It's run by the NFL, I think, because like all the posters at all the elementary schools around here are advertising it, and it's something along those lines. Did Jack do that? We tried flag football this year. Maybe worse than T-ball.
Really?
Yeah. There's two teams in his age group, and they just play each other every week. So what I will give them credit for is this is a once a week commitment from 8 to 10.
I like that.
We do a practice from 8 to 9, and we do a game from 9 to 10, and then we're done.
Yep.
So flag football, for those wondering, is tag. Right. With a ball. It is organized tag, and you have a ball in your hand. Yeah. And let's just like Harvey's pretty competitive too. And he realized that he was probably one of the better baseball players on his T-ball team. Because he would make contact pretty much every time he swung. He could throw it as far or further than any of the other kids.
Right.
The accuracy we're still working on, but he's got an arm.
Dial that in later.
But now it's like, okay, you go from being, I guess, one of the better kids to like, we finish our first game and he's, "Dad, do you think I'm one of the best on the team?" And I'm like, "No.
Oh boy."
Nope. "Well, my second best." Nope.
Well,
"Am I third?" I was like, "Son, let's not go down this road." Like, you're going to have to count.
Yeah. I don't want to do this.
We're going
to
get into multiplication tables before we start comparing ourselves to the other kids. There are a couple of kids, two on his team and two on the other team. One on the other team, probably the best 7-year-old football player I've ever seen. He's just, dude, he loves to play defense. He gets right up over top of the ball as they hand it off for hiking, and then he starts running. And he dives, he slides, he will not stop until he's either caught the guy or the, he's in the end zone.
Yeah, you can't.
And then the when he does catch, he has like 15 tackles a game or 15 flag pulls a game. And then, dude, he pulls the flag.
Brian Urlacher over there.
He pulls the flag, he drops it on the ground, he runs right back to where the ref just put the ball down. He said, I'm ready to go again.
Wild.
Dude, I'm like, son, are you watching that? Because if you want to talk about being good at this game, watch that right there.
You think you're better than that?
Yeah, that kid's got it.
Did you honestly ask me if you're better than that?
My parents were just here from Virginia, and my dad, you know, loves football and loves basketball, loves all sports, but he's like, I got to meet that kid's parents. And I was like, all right, Dad, like, he's seven. I mean, come on, slow down.
You want to ask for his autograph?
So sure enough, he's walking up and he's like, where is Sammy's parents?
Oh, boy.
And I was like, Dad, where are we going with this? He goes, Sammy, that's my kid. I was like, no, it isn't, Dad. That's not your kid. You can't say that shit out here in California.
Oh, boy.
But he goes, the dad was super cool. He's like, thanks. Yeah, we work with him a lot. And he's like, you can tell. You know, we'd recruit him and take him in any school in Virginia. I was like, all right, Pops.
I don't even think like you, that's not, how dare that dad for taking credit for that?
Yeah. Oh, he what didn't. No, oh, no. He was like, we work with him, Mom, but thank you. He actually said, he's like, I wish we could figure out how to make him grow a little more. And I was like, he don't need to grow anymore. He just needs to stay as fast as he is right
but
now.
But if a kid wants, that's what, I mean, I think for years, it's going to be whatever kid try the hardest or they're going to be the good ones. And I mean,
whatever that father is doing to get that point across to his son, that's what I'd like to know. Because it's like,
the effort with my son is a little lacking.
That's where we are too. Yeah. And I don't know what to say, because if I tell him that, I'm being discouraging or I'm being mean.
Yeah.
Those are, Lauren used the larger of those two words. Harvey said mean. And then it's like, but he has to know. So then I, like, one day I recorded him. And I was like, do you see how you kind of stop running when, you know, the guy gets to you or past you? I was like, you know, I think the way that I was taught is we run until we hear a whistle. And, but I don't know how to teach him effort.
You can't teach aggression.
Yeah.
You know? Like, that's not, and like Jack played basketball.
How'd that go?
That was just disaster. I mean, and again, I turn off the competitiveness with my own kids. I didn't coach basketball. I just sat back and watched. And we're in like the second or third game. And I'm pretty sure where he sits on the hierarchy of the boys, and it ain't at the top. And then the coach is like, okay, everybody, Jack's got the ball. Everybody get out of the way. Everybody get out of the way. And I looked at my wife. I was like, my kid is the kid that they're giving the ball to and making everybody get out of the way? Like, I knew he wasn't good, but I didn't know we were here. And so that was kind of a prize swallowing.
Make a wish.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, whoa, I didn't know that was going to happen.
At seven.
Yeah. And he made his basket.
Oh, thank God.
Afterwards, I said, you scored a basket. Way to go. High five, you know? And I said, wasn't that fun? And he was like, yeah. And I said, don't you want to just do that over and over and over again? Just keep scoring all those baskets. And he was like, nah.
Okay. So he doesn't like basketball?
No, we're cut from a different cloth there.
And okay.
He said, you know, basketball, they all just come in they hit my arms.
Mm-hmm.
I said, yeah, you got the ball. They're trying to get the ball from you. And he was like, well, I didn't like that. Can I try football?
You're really going to hate that.
Yeah. Like, we're going to need to.
You don't even have to have the ball in football, and they're going to want to hit your arm.
You cannot try to play football, buddy. So we're on to tennis.
Okay.
Which he has great hand-eye coordination. He's good at it, but the problem is that the irrational confidence on this kid, blessing and a curse, I think, he just thinks he's God's gift to the world.
We're the same, yeah.
And I'm like, hey, you got tennis today? And he's like, I'm better than everybody anyway. And I said, you're not better than that kid. He's like, I beat a 9-year-old last year. I was like, the 9-year-old could barely walk. Like, no, you got to practice. And I said, you know, like the Padre fan, Fernando Tatis Jr., you know, he takes batting practice every day.
Yeah.
Manny Machado batting practice every day. These guys always practice. And he was like, well, I don't think I need to practice. I'm like, okay, this is great.
Where are you playing tennis?
Ed Mitchell Park, of course.
Okay.
In Folsom. We got a Coach Brian. Coach Brian is hilarious. He coaches through the city, but he has an adult sense of humor that he preaches to the children, and they don't understand his jokes. But I am there watching the practice, and I'm just cracking up the whole time.
Oh, yeah.
He had my favorite joke of his. All the kids were, you know, in a bunch. And he said, okay, everybody get in a single file line over there. And he's like gathering some stuff. And he looks up, and they're just in a different bunch over here. And he said, what the hell kind of Common Core math single file line is that? And I just erupted in laughter. And the kids are looking at him like no idea what he's talking about. It was hilarious. He's a riot, but he, you know, as long as my son is respectful and kind to the other kids, I really genuinely don't care if he's good. Would it be cool if he went out and scored 30 points a game? Sure. But I'd rather have him be nice to the kids on this team.
Sure.
He says thank you to his coach every time, which my dad always made me do. My dad made me do that all the time.
Yeah.
And for some reason, I could lie about a lot of things when I was a kid. I couldn't lie to him about that. I'd go get in the car and he'd say, did you say thank you to your coaches? Like roll my eyes and get out of the car and go and say thank you to my coaches. And then I started coaching. And I was like, nobody is saying thank you to me.
Yeah, for sure.
I am wasting my time out here. And then every now and then kids will come up and say thank you. And that felt rewarding to me as a coach.
Yeah.
So I now know what these parents sacrifice to be out there. And, you know, like I remember when I was a kid, some of these dads would show up in their, you know, button ups and slacks and like clearly coming straight from
the office. And like,
that just sounds terrible.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know. That's the stuff that I really value. And Jack is a good kid. He's a nice kid. And he takes a lot of pride in playing chess these days, too.
Is he decent at chess?
He says, I have no idea to play. So he looks great to me.
I don't know if I could play chess.
No, he's in chess club. Sure.
Nice.
In chess club. And he was like, I don't want to go to chess club. I'm going to take that guy's king in like 5 minutes. And I was like, boy.
Dude, that's incredible.
I hope you're as good as you say you are, because I don't know enough.
The Magnus Carlsen of elementary school chess.
Sure. Maybe we should move him to Moscow and have him be an underling for the guys over there. But yeah, the chess thing, that's what he needs to do, is just play games that I don't know how to play.
Yeah.
Because then I don't get frustrated. I'm like, yeah, hell of a move. King to Rook, Knight 6. That was a great one there. But yeah.
There's no chance I could play a game of chess.
No.
Yeah.
I'm stunned that he just gets so into it. And there's a bunch of kids that do, and like, you know, not to stereotype, but like some of the really good athletic kids, they were in chess club too. I'm like, man, I hope
not in our day.
Yeah. I would like to say that I wouldn't have made fun of you when I was 7, but I probably would have made fun of you when I was 7.
Not in our day.
No. No. But
we got to figure out something for the girls to do. Is he into any like the card games? Is he into like Pokemon or is he doing baseball cards yet or anything like that?
He had like a little blip with Pokemon cards, but he must have just been because someone at school talked about it.
Yeah, for sure.
And that was like a 3-day thing.
That's real hot for us right now, but it's very new as well.
Yeah.
And Harvey just switched schools at the start of this semester.
Yep.
So I think that's exactly where that's coming from. But
Jack's really gravitated towards all the superhero Marvel stuff. And he just started playing video games.
Yeah, we're still not there yet. We haven't done the
video games. We're pretty strict about how often he can play, but you were the first generation of parents who know how to play video games.
Yeah, for sure.
So I watch him play video games and I'm just like biting my tongue because he's playing some Lego game, like a Lego Star Wars game, and he's running through a forest and like I see like a tree light up and I'm like, and he just runs past it. I'm like, hey, like, you got to do something with that tree there, man. I don't know what, but something.
Yeah.
And he just doesn't grasp like the storylines yet. Soon enough, perhaps.
I had an N64 when I was a kid.
The best.
And that was it for me though, man. I never really moved past that.
Oh, I love it. I wish my brother-in-law has his N64
still. Yeah. GoldenEye.
Oh yeah.
Ken Griffey Jr.
Yep. Mario Kart.
Yeah. Mario Kart, of course. Even the first Mario, Super Mario or whatever it was.
Yep.
Mario 64.
Mario 64, great game.
But man, Zelda. Did you get into Zelda?
I wasn't a Zelda. I wasn't a dork.
Yeah. What was the one with the foxes that flew space planes?
Star Fox.
Yeah,
that was a big one on N64.
Uh-huh.
I stayed on the video game train. You'd mentioned academic probation previously. I may or may not have been an academic probation guy my first semester at school because they had just come out with Grand Theft Auto San Andreas. And if you thought I was going to go to philosophy 101 Professor Helmut Waltischer instead of hitting the streets at San Andreas, you had me wrong.
Now, is this the same San Andreas that used to have an ABC supply or a different one?
No, this is a different one. Boy, I miss heading out there.
Yeah, I bet you do.
Jessica, she was a treat. this, did you go out there?
I was supposed to.
Yeah, it was in your territory there for a minute. She had an actual broom on the wall because she it was like part of a coven of a witch. It was a honest to God witch, she said.
I dig it.
That was interesting. I got a kick out of her.
She was.
To her talk all day.
She cussed like a sailor.
She sure could.
Boy.
She sure could. They're on their little trip to Mexico right now.
Are they?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Did she find another home for?
She's still alive and kicking.
Did she go to work at another branch or something?
No, she's still there. She's still running in San Andreas, I think.
I thought they just closed it.
If they did, I don't know, because it's not my territory anymore. A couple weeks ago, somebody told me they got material from San Andreas. They shouldn't have a branch.
Boy,
there.
We might have to really edit this, because I'm almost certain that somebody they have closed that branch now.
Somebody told me they might still have material that they're getting rid of, I guess, potentially. But there's no reason to have a branch there.
No.
None.
No.
With Sonora. Sonora and San Andreas.
Less than an hour away, or whatever it is. Yeah.
That was it was beautiful country out there. I liked that drive.
So I grew up in Central Virginia. There was a town called Buena Vista, which is a population of about 3,000.
Okay.
Reminds me a lot of that area, you know.
I mean, I was definitely frowned upon in that town as an outsider.
Yeah.
For sure.
Yeah. I didn't take much exception to that, though.
No, I wasn't. Yeah. I wasn't brokenhearted about
it. It's all right.
That.
Yeah.
There was a Bret Hart High School out there. As a wrestling fan when I was a kid, Bret the Hitman Hart played a big role in my childhood. So
it can't be named that.
I was pretty excited to see Bret Hart High School.
There's no chance they named a high school after a wrestler.
Yeah, I wish they did. I think it was Hart with an E at the end, which the Hitman certainly was. That wasn't his thing. So I don't know who that was named after. But what was the Calaveras County had the frog jumping? It was like the frog jumping championship of in North America or something. I think Mark Twain had something to do in Calaveras County.
Okay. He made his way around Northern California, because I think there was also some Mark Twain in like Monterey area too, right? Or am I thinking of another, maybe a Steinbeck down there? I don't know. Or a Hemingway.
Academic probation. I'm not sure.
Yeah.
I know, my family's from Missouri. He was Samuel Clemens was a Hannibal, Missouri native, so. They like to take a lot of pride in
it. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, not a lot going on out in Missouri. Love it, though.
They got those Kansas City Chiefs.
They do have the Kansas City Chiefs. My dad jumped back on that bandwagon when the Chargers moved to L.A., so he's all in on the Red Kingdom.
He's living right now.
He is. It, serves him right. I had people say, my cousins back there, say, you hate the Chargers now. Why don't you just jump on our bandwagon? I can't do that.
Yeah.
I'm not gonna, if they were bad, maybe I would have. I was like, I can't get on that. Now, so it's just whoever I'm betting on.
Yeah,
whoever I like.
Yeah. Did you play fantasy this year?
Yes.
How'd that go?
This was the first year it went pretty poorly, actually.
Yeah.
I liken myself as a very good fantasy manager. I have several championships under my belt, probably closing in on double digits.
That should have been one of your rebuttals in your T-ball. It's like, look, that's if true. I can manage a group of grown men.
Yeah, you want to see what I was able to put together with this squad. Jared Goff led me to victory long before he was a good NFL quarterback.
Yeah.
But, that's – maybe I'll email that lady and tell her. I thought I was going to run into her at tryouts. I didn't. Our tryouts, by the way, I felt bad for the mom who was next to me because I was just ridiculing these tryouts, as one does when you're not involved.
Yeah.
But they were throwing – they pulled out the jugs machine, the pitching machine, and they were throwing the pop-ups. These pop-ups must have been going 150 feet and probably 60 feet in the air. And I said to the mom next to me, I was like, these boys aren't going to see a pop-up like this for 5 more years.
Yeah.
What do we do? We just sat there and watched kid after kid, 2 fly balls, miss it, run back, pick it up, throw it too far because the ball's gone too far now, over for 68 children.
Oh, my word.
We were out there for over 2 hours. It was insane.
Yeah.
Man, one line, a single file line of kids to get 3 swings.
I'm like, you guys got a lot of kids out there playing baseball.
A lot of kids, but didn't we think maybe like half of them can hit while the other half does the fielding drills?
That almost makes too much sense.
Oh boy. And I saw the dads out there with their clipboards. I said, boy, I'm glad I took my hat out of that ring. And then, so we had 6 teams, 8 managers, which is when I happily pulled my hat from the ring. And we got an email yesterday in need of managers. I didn't respond. Nope. Maybe if she had been a little kinder, I would have volunteered my time. Not anymore.
Her loss. Ultimately. And the loss of 8 to 12, 7-year-old Folsom children.
Molding the youth of America. Who did she really let down?
Yeah.
The community.
Yeah. Agreed.
You do.
Well, hey, buddy, this has been fun.
What a treat.
I appreciate you doing this.
We'll have to do it again.
If we will.
What a riot.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
What'd you think? Is this, and we can edit a lot of this stuff out. So. Yeah,
I like it a lot.
It was fun, right?
Yeah, it was very.
It's a cool little atmosphere and everything else.
Very professional.
Yeah.
How did you stumble onto that?
So this is Spark Studio HQ, which I probably should ask the owner when we finish this. Like, hey, is it Spark Studio headquarters or Spark Studio HQ? Because when I'm plugging and doing this, like, sure. Should probably know how she wants it said.
Sure.
She's a member of the local Chamber of Commerce, and okay. We met at that. And then we did a roof for a good friend of hers that has helped her with the studio a little bit too. So nice connection to have. But
yeah.
Also, this has kind of always been a little pipe dream of mine, a little side project I've wanted to mess around with.
I like that a lot. And you're going to be talking politics here in a minute, right?
So not today, but eventually I've got an Auburn Chamber of Commerce member coming on, which I have decided is a long-term goal of mine.
Look, I could see that.
I want to do local politics, maybe 10 years.
Okay.
You know, maybe get to my mid-40s. Maybe that same like Biden trajectory where you start in your 40s and then you just stay just until you're like 85.
I like that.
You know?
I like that.
So we'll see what happens. But I'll share this with you. The city of Auburn is in a budget deficit for the second consecutive year, meaning they have more money going out than they have coming in, and to the point where they've had to freeze hiring of like police officers and fire people and city workers, and like not only freeze hiring new, but also eliminate a couple of positions to try and make up some of that deficit. And I don't know the whole story behind it, but it's just like, man, Auburn is such a nice, like quaint little community. The city of Auburn, much smaller than you probably realize compared to the actual like limits of Auburn.
Reaches of it, sure.
Yeah. But, you know, you look at where we are in Loomis. Mm-hmm. Have you been out in downtown in the last couple of years? Like, have you been to the new brewery here?
In Loomis?
Yeah.
No, I have not.
Yeah, so High Hand Nursery there has a new brewery associated with it that's killer.
There's a pizza joint that I want to try here. I can't remember the name of it, but it's
Pizza Factory?
Detroit-style pizza. I don't know. I'm a big Detroit-style guy.
Okay.
You don't see it a lot. The big old thick.
Oh, yeah.
I like that. I saw, like, what's the best Detroit-style pizza in Sacramento, and it pointed me to somewhere in Loomis.
I wonder if it's Pizza Factory.
I'll have to take a look.
Yeah.
Was, but.
Red's downtown is awesome. Taylor's is an old staple, like an ice cream shop, like a, you know, kind of mom and pop Dairy Queen feel. But then they've got the other brewery, the Loomis Basin Brewery, and they have their gastro pub that's been wildly successful. So, and now a lot of other like local businesses up Taylor Street here
popping up,
and the town is thriving. So Auburn actually just hired the city manager that was responsible for a lot of the,
what's the
redesign of Loomis.
Why would Auburn not be able to keep up? That's so interesting.
Yeah, so I think in my opinion, it's a couple of things. The mismanagement of funds, obviously. Sure. I think there are two very specific niches of Auburn. There's Old Town and Downtown.
Mm-hmm.
And for some reason that goes way long back before I even moved up there or started to learn anything about this, but those two little mini micro communities have feuded against one another of like, who's the better Auburn?
Mm-hmm.
Instead of how can we just create this destination of a town for people to come visit and spend money in.
Especially on the way up to Tahoe, you'd think that that'd be it's a nice little stopgap to bring in money that way too.
And Old Town is what you get to first. So if you exit the freeway, that's Old Town. And then if you go up that street and take a left, essentially, you get to Downtown.
Yeah.
And they both have their draws, certainly, like the different businesses in each. But I think it'd be pretty cool if they could figure out a way to drop whatever feud they have there and just make the entire area, because it's walkable. You could walk from one to the other very easily.
That's so silly that they'd be so, but you know, that's because sometimes that's how small towns can be. The other side of the tracks, we don't take too kindly to them.
They better figure it out though, man, because
I mean, that's not an area where you want to be letting firefighters go. I'll tell you that.
Sure.
That's
I
mean,
or police for that matter.
Yeah.
It's right off the freeway. So, you know, I'm in the Chamber of Commerce up there, and part of that's a leadership program that I did for this year, 2025. Right. You spend an afternoon with fire and police. And one of the questions that a member of the class asked is like, what's the most popular crime or, you know, what do we deal with the most up here? Unfortunately, one of them is like trafficking and like child porn and stuff. And it's like unfathomable to even think about, but like that's a problem anywhere. But the number one is smash and grabs, because it's pretty easy to drive into Auburn, run up and down the streets of downtown and Old Town, smash a couple windows, grab some bags, and get right back on the freeway and get out of there.
Down to Natomas.
But or further west, as it were. Yeah. We're a popular target for some Bay Area criminal activity, but it's very short. And then drugs is apparently becoming less of. I mean, it's always going to be a problem.
Sure.
Less of a problem than it was several years ago, and I would hope that that's a trend that we're seeing in most small towns, where now that COVID's done and now that life is starting to get a little bit more back to normal, maybe we see a little less of that than we did
when
life was so tough. But I'll keep you posted on all that. That'll
keep you posted.
It'll be interesting to
be round two of our podcast.
Yeah. All right. Well, thanks, buddy. Thanks for coming in.
Yeah. What a treat. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, for sure.